Good morning. I'm Gail Q, and our guest this morning is Serge Ben-Hayen. Before I open the mic to Serge, I'll give listeners who may not be familiar with Serge or his work just a little background. Serge has been giving esoteric healing since 1999. Shortly after starting to give his hands-on healing, he began teaching, or presenting, as he prefers to refer to it, presenting the healing philosophy and techniques to others in weekend workshops. During the last 11 years, he's worked nonstop, 7 days a week, and they're long days. Initially, he worked from his home, and then when it became too much traffic in the home, he moved to his garden shed in the backyard, and too much traffic there, so off to a veranda in an old house in Alstonville, and eventually to a purpose-built clinic attached to his home. Now he works from a multi-room clinic in Ganilabaw called Universal Medicine, where several practitioners who have studied with him also offer a wide variety of esoteric healings, from physiotherapy to esoteric psychology and modalities in between, such as chakra puncture and esoteric massage. Serge travels regularly around the globe. He works from the lighthouse in the UK and has also been offering annual retreats in Vietnam. During the same time, he's written and published 5 books, and in recent years, he's found time to write and compose music, produce 3 CDs with Chris James, and I believe they're working on another one right now. The one we've been listening to this morning is called Walk With Your Heart. It was released in October, and we'll have a few more tracks during the interview. And earlier in 2010, that's like last year already, remember, he's produced Jesse Smith's latest CD, which is called Taking Time Out. And we may have a track from that as well. So please join me in welcoming Serge to Bay FM Studios. Good morning, Serge.
Good morning, Gail. Thank you for having me on your show again.
Yeah, it's always my pleasure. And thanks for taking the time to come down to Byron, because I know how busy you are. Do you find this time period, the holidays, the Christmas rush, does that create any kind of extra need in your clinic? Or is it just another kind of normal period for you, busy all the time?
Because we keep our finger on the pulse, it's mostly just another day, another month, but we do see an increase in emergencies around about the 15th of December to the end of January, particularly with people visiting family and so forth, and that sort of emergencies are coming up, and hospital visits.
Mm-hmm. And do you celebrate Christmas yourself? Is that a holiday for you?
No, every day, look, everybody makes Christmas such a, everyone puts so much effort into making Christmas a joyous time, and we make that same effort 365 days of the year, and so, you know, it's a little bit down when you see so many people making that much effort in 1 month of the year or 1 day of the year, and then the other 11, they make very little effort at all to be nice to everyone, so... For us, it's not really Christmas. For us, it's just another great day. You can say it's Christmas every day.
Right. And as we've done for many years now, you're here to bring us a New Year's message. And we'll just get right into that. But I thought we might start by commenting on the old phrase, Happy New Year, which even my grandson pointed out to me the other day. He said, it's kind of a burden to put on people that they have to be happy. So I was explaining to him the difference of the use happy and joy. Do you want to just mention that briefly, just so that people don't keep insisting that you have a happy New Year, in case there's a better way to experience the New Year?
There's always a much better way to experience the whole year, and really it's about seeing the year as something that unfolds and dealing with what unfolds. But we need to understand that that can be joyous, that there is an actual joy in looking forward towards the year. And what we should do is look forward towards the year with joy, but not necessarily look back at the year past and try to make claims to better what we haven't liked about the year or what we might be carrying. The most joyful way of looking forward to the year is to see it as an unfoldment, and then as it unfolds, you deal with what is there to be dealt with. And then it's much more joyous because you're looking forward to what's ahead.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, let's start with that New Year's message. Now, I see you posted it to the website on New Year's Eve, was it?
Yes.
And it's quite lengthy, so we'll just, as we have to do in radio broadcasts, touch on some points in it. And for those people who are interested in reading the full message, that's available on the universalmedicine.com.au website. So over to you, Serge, just to give us the New Year's message for 2011.
This year's New Year's message is a little bit different to the past, although we haven't left any of the past messages out. In the past, we've given tips on how to be for the ensuing year, as in do not observe and do not absorb, give preference to your presence and conscious presence and so forth. But what we've done this year is combine those esoteric tips with what exactly is going on, and touched on a lot on the subjects of reality. One of the things that we should look forward to very much, and that is truth. We've lost our ability to actually deal with truth. Most of us are in reaction to truth, and so we use whatever we can to establish ourselves a way of life that doesn't deal with anything until that anything catches up with us. So what we need to say is, hey, the world isn't this and the world is that. So there are many joyous and joyful situations, but there's a lot of misery and there's a lot of desperation. A lot of people have given up. And we also need to say that's exactly what is going on. So the New Year's message is saying, hey, this is going on, so what is going on? In 2011, we should be a much more advanced species. But in my 46 years, I started off my youth looking forward to or being aware of heart disease. But I'm 10 years away now from being in that statistical range where it says that one in two men will get prostate cancer after the age of 55. Now, how does that happen in one generation? So we need to have a look at 2011 and say, how did all this happen? Mm. In addition to all the happy and good times that are also occurring.
Right. So if we're saying the world is this is what's going on in the world, but what is causing this to be going on in the world? So that's the work that we really need to get in touch with, not just look at the manifestation, the outer result of what's going on.
Yes, it's really the key, or the science, if we can call it that, is about endorsing truth. If we start to endorse truth, we won't be so scared at looking at what is wrong. We have a very bad habit as a humanity, and that is to fix the smallest problem with the greatest cause. And by doing that, we miss out on the greater scope of what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. And so with a focus on truth, I guess a question that often arises is, how do we know if something is really true? How can we measure that? Because we have these beliefs and ideals and programs that have been instilled in us. How can we differentiate between what is just a belief and what is the truth?
That's a difficult question to answer in short, but I'll attempt it. Ultimately, in a world where we can say everything is energy, the truth has to be energetic. And so if we use the word I'm happy, then that word happy has to have an energy in a world that everything is energy. And so we need to define or mature ourselves in a way that we can say, well, what exactly is happy? Because when a drug addict scores a load of drugs, at that moment, that drug addict is happy.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't say a load of drugs is good for you. So how would you define happiness at that moment, or being happy when you come home with a box of beer that you've just bought? Beer is not good for the body. So we need to understand what the word happy means in this instance. So by identifying how we express ourselves, we get to learn how to express ourselves in truth. So what we should say is, the person seeking beer or drugs is not really happy, they're finding relief. So if we start using the word relief instead of happy, you quickly get to the truth that that person is not happy, but actually seeking a relief from something, which means they're not happy. So you can go from the word happiness to unhappiness very quickly if we learn to express truthfully.
Okay, and so that always brings to mind that we need to, before we go much further into the interview, point out that language is very specific for you. You don't ever carelessly use a word when you actually meant to say something else. So it's a good opportunity to let the listeners know that you're very specific about what you say. And one of the main things that we probably need to define is the difference in the language that you use between soul and spirit, assuming we're going to come across those words in this morning's interview. So could you just define that for us?
Yeah, look, if there was one thing that I could say to humanity as a message overall, year after year, it would be to sit down one day and understand that the world is either spiritual or soulful. And that's from an energetic point of view, and one day that'll be scientifically be proven. But until that time, what we need to understand is that we can live entirely from our spirit, or we can live entirely from our soul. And the reality of that life is completely different. And so every word that the spirit would use as a human being, and every word that the soul would use as a human being, not just words, but in action and behaviors, are completely two different ways of life. And each life will say, I am the truth. Each life will say, this is my reality. Each way of life will say, this is the truth. But only the soulful encompasses all of the life, whereas the spirit actually leaves out the soul. And that's the difference. So the soul says, yes, there is a spirit, and that's the separation part of me, whereas the spirit says, I'm it. I am the higher self, and I have a counterpart, the human being, who is my lesser self. And
okay.
So the language goes on and on.
Right. Okay, so the soul is all-encompassing of the human experience, all aspects of it, the ego, the spirit, and the soul. They're all there.
Yes.
Whereas spirit likes to be the king of the mountain.
Correct.
So to speak. Okay. And from reading your New Year's message, a couple of things to bring to the listeners is about love, that we're basically all looking for love. And I think we all know this at some level, whether we admit it or even can see it in our daily lives. But everything that we go about doing is, in essence, looking for love. Is this right? And some it comes out looking like need for approval and different things, but the core underneath that is that we're all wanting the experience of love.
Yeah, let's take it back a little bit and say the soul is love. And the soul will be the first to say that is your first and foremost way of being, love. The spirit, on the other hand, also seeks love, but in the absence of love will substitute anything but love and say that is what it wants or needs. And that's the big difference. But bottom line is, no matter what you have, no matter what you desire, no matter what you like most to eat or have as a good time, you want love. Everybody wants to be loved, and everybody wants to feel love in their bodies.
Yes, I think that's probably true. We're going to have a short little music break. We'll continue with the album that Serge has been part of with Chris James, called Walk With Your Heart, and we will be talking about his musical experiences later on in the program, so I hope you can stay tuned. Serge will be with us for about another hour today. You're tuned to BayFM 99.9. There's some lovely instrumental pieces on Walk With Your Heart, as well as the ones that have inspiring lyrics. Our guest this morning is Serge Benhayan, and we're starting the interview with talk about the New Year's message. So, Serge, I noticed in the message that you're very specific with some dates about the energetic changes that are happening on the planet. You've always identified them quite clearly, with the major one coming in at 2000. And then we've just had another major change in energy on the 10th of December. Can you talk about those dates and what's ahead, looking forward, as we talked about?
Okay, so let's start the response of that question by saying that we do live in a world where everything is energy. And what I've done is I've extended that quote that Einstein brought to the fore by saying, if everything is energy, therefore everything is because of energy. So if we live in a world that everything, we can say everything is energy, what we need to say is what is energetically going on. Now the picture gets much more interesting when somebody says, hey, the energy we live in has changed. And that's supposed to, that really should stop the world. It really should stop us all and say, well, if the rules have changed, if the environment, if the life force I live in and breathe in every day has changed, how do I need to adjust to that? Because if I don't adjust, then I'm always going to be playing catch-up. And that catch-up might be the completely opposite way to how I need to be in order to be living in the environment I am to be living in. Mm-hmm. Our environment is energetic. So what I've tried to do is energetic, and anybody can be aware of the energetic changes. I'm not special. Anybody can do it. But I do use my developed ability to help those that haven't quite developed their abilities, not to say that I'm better than them or not. And to announce these certain energetic changes is very, very important, because if you don't adjust to them, your body is adjusting to them. And if your behavior does not adjust to them, it means that you're living in contra to the way your body is pulling to behave, mm-hmm. both physically, physiologically, and psychologically. So it's important to announce them to anybody who wants to listen. Of course, they can be ignored, they can be denied, and so forth. But thus far, in the 11th or 12th year of service, they've been extremely accurate, and everything that we've predicted has come true. So when we say that there is a greater amount of love released on the 10th of December 2010, that means that your body is going to be looking for a greater amount of gentleness, if not a greater amount of love and stillness. If your behavior is contra to that and you haven't made that adjustment, it means that your body has to throw you greater markers to let you know what you're not doing, or what you're doing in contra to the way it pulls to go.
Mm-hmm.
So the human body is ultimately magnetically pulled and controlled by the soul, but the spirit can have its way with it as well. So if we're living in an era where there is more love than ever before, and your choice of food, your choice of drink, your choice of behavior, and your choice of pastime, hobby, and whatever is not conducive to creating more love, then your body is going to be receiving a bigger whack than before. So from the 10th of December onwards, any behavior or that which is not conducive to creating more love will be greater in its opposite direction. Now, what exactly does that mean? It means greater illness and disease, a quicker turnaround of symptoms, and greater injuries, particularly in sporting fields, will be seen by the world.
Mm-hmm. And what other markers do we have on the calendar in terms... I mean, we are in 2011. 2012 has been for centuries talked about as the end of the Mayan calendar and the possibility of the end of the world, which you've been also clear about is not going to be happening. Mm. But what is this huge energy we're in right now, and the marker on the December 10th, are there other ones coming up in the next 12 months that we should be aware of?
Well, 2012 is the final marker, but there's one in between. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
What are these changes? These changes are the descension of the soul plane closer to the earth plane. Now, the earth plane is called esoterically the temporal life or the physical life.
Mm-hmm.
And the soul plane is now moving closer to the temporal life or the temporal world, and therefore there is more soul material or soul energy closer to the human life than ever before. Now, that soul material or soul energy is love. And so we've got love closer than at any time before. Now, that major descension by the soul plane happened on the 10th of December. We have been pre-prepared by that, by the energy or the active energy of the soul plane, which is called Christ energy, and hence the second coming that occurred in 2000 was the light of the soul plane descending. But this is the actual soul's plane descending on us on the 10th of December. The next one is on the 26th of June. And that's going to be an enormously major physical experience for everybody, much more than it is energetic. This particular one is energetic, and everybody can feel it all around you. But the one in June is going to be extremely physical in its presence. And then, of course, the final descension that we will get for the next 500 years will happen on the first day of the year 2012.
Okay. Well, don't know if we'll be back here in 2012 for the next New Year's message. We'll have to... Okay, he's nodding. Yes, we will. So if we can look forward to that. Now, it's kind of a good news, bad news message here. I mean, the good news is there's more love than ever before. It's here now. Love has come to town, as you've said, no matter where you're living. The bad news is if you're not paying attention or if you're not honoring your soulful existence and moving into that love, the repercussions of ignoring it are going to be more severe. More noticeable. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it goes back to the earlier comment I made on the radio today, and that is about endorsing truth. And what we've got to do is sit down and say, how can good news be also bad news? Or how can the best news ever turn out to be in any way, shape, or form bad news? And so we've got to start looking at and saying, how am I living that can make very good news bad news? Or how am I living that can turn around love into something I'm going to say, hang on a sec, there cannot be more love because I can't feel it. What we've got to say is not Serge's prediction is wrong, but if Serge's prediction is correct, how am I living that makes it not correct for me?
Not be true. Right. Good. Now, I'm supposed to do the weather in a few minutes, so I thought this would be a good opportunity to talk about the physicality of Mother Earth, because she's in a lot of distress right now as we go through these energetic changes. And I thought maybe, especially rain, we've had so much rain and flooding to the north of us, what does that represent energetically, this intense water and flooding?
If we think that Mother Earth is no different as a physical body to our body, we need to understand that if we drown ourselves with food that is not good for us or drink that is not good for us, our body has to adjust and clear. Now, we have many different ways of clearing. Urination, feces and so forth, pimples, acne, skin diseases and so forth are all ways in which our body clears itself from what we put on the inside. Well, the world has its way of clearing too. And we've got to remember that if we walk 100 yards in anger, we are energetically imprinting Mother Earth with anger. Mm-hmm. Now, she can handle that. But when there are 6 billion people not walking with love at any one given time, our trees, our plants, the earth, the ocean, everything that Mother Earth is, cops that energetically. So she, every now and then, has to say, I have to clear too. I have to give my peace of mind. I have to have my resolution. I have to have my calmness. So rain specifically clears the energetic imprinting of how we are in every way that we do. In other words, physically so. The way we touch, the way we walk, anything we do physical, the rain is a clearing of.
Uh-huh. So Australia is actually having a very large clearing now at the beginning, or certainly over here on the northeast. And what about things like earthquakes? What does that represent energetically?
Earthquakes is about creating space. It's where the earth says the suppression of the prana is too much on my outer surface. So I create a little bit of a split to release. And that split is really just a symbolic gesture from Mother Earth to say, hey, the way you're living is suppressive. We need to expand here.
Okay, great. I want to ask you a couple more, but I just feel the need to clarify then your use of prana in that instance when you're saying that there's too much prana on the earth.
Prana is the energy that the spiritual human being prefers to live in. Prana is the energy of the life force that created itself to live in separation to the soul. So for a long, long time on Earth, we've had prana as the predominating life force, and then we've had the soul's light waiting for us to call upon it. But our time is up, which is what the end of the world term of the Mayan calendar means.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that the predomination or the ruling of prana on Earth has now come to a stop. And it completely stops in 2012. In other words, the world as we know it energetically has ended.
Mm-hmm.
And making way for the new way of being, which is the soul's way of being.
Okay. What about the wind? What does the wind represent energetically?
The wind actually clears excessive mental energy. And that's why sometimes the wind can give us a bit of a headache. But
There's
so much mental energy that the wind has to come along and spray it open. And so what that does is it stops us from being fed information that we sometimes say, where did that come from? So when that builds up too much, the wind has to be aroused to clear it.
And volcanoes?
Our volcanoes. Volcanoes is Mother Earth. It's like a big acne exploding.
Uh-huh.
It's Mother Earth saying, hey, enough is enough. You know, it's just a release to warn us. Volcanoes are always a warning to help us stop and just see where our footsteps have been going.
Okay. Last one. Fire. Wildfires, bushfires, forest fires.
Fire is the most healing of all the elements. And that's the one that actually converts everything instantly from prana to fire. And it's very, very necessary.
Okay, well, that's our lead into the weather report. Taking Time Out, that's from Jesse Smith's latest CD, which, Serge, were you the producer on that? Is that what you would call yourself?
I'm not sure what the word producer means in terms of music. In the movie industry, it's the person who puts the money in. I certainly didn't put the money into any of the CDs I'm involved with. Do I help them? With Jesse, I just gave him a bit of help with lyrics and so forth and a bit of direction. And with Chris, of course, I'm a little bit more involved, but I'm certainly not the producer if it's the same meaning as
money. Okay. But your involvement, I think, is what I was trying to identify.
Definitely.
There. And I love that album. There's lots of fun songs on there. Okay, we are going to talk about music just a little bit later in the program, because right now I wanted to ask Serge about the very big topic of reincarnation. And I know from my experience of attending some of the presentations that Serge gives, reincarnation is such a huge, I don't really want to say complicated, but it is complex how the reincarnation works, and we can't possibly go into all of that on air today. We wouldn't be able to give you the full enough picture to really understand all of that, but what can we share with the listeners, Serge, about reincarnation? Is it important to us to know it exists or what our previous lives were?
Let's begin by making two points.
Okay.
One is this. Our biggest science, our biggest study will be reincarnation. The greatest science we have in humanity is reincarnation. It'll be the greatest study we could ever, ever, ever do. Two. Reincarnation, whether you believe in it or not, is really simply this. Reincarnation gives the greatest responsibility we can have. For example, you can live one life and do whatever you like, and does that mean you just go to heaven or hell? Do you get pardoned and you go to... I mean, that doesn't inspire or instigate any form of responsibility. If you sensibly teach reincarnation, and that we don't come back as caterpillars or anything like that. Sorry, Buddhist, we do not. If we teach it as an ongoing unfoldment of the spirit learning how to actually not be spiritual in separation to the soul, and to actually say, one day I've tried everything and the only true success I can have is to be soulful, then that is what reincarnation is.
Mm-hmm.
To have many, 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 many attempts at trying to live something that was started long ago in separation, and then finally get to that point where we can say, hey, this doesn't really work. I've been poor, I've been rich, I've been Chinese, Japanese, American, Hungarian, and none of that has brought me anything great, because in the end, what I really want is love. And so reincarnation is about that. It's the teaching of how to be sensible and responsible with an expressive life in whatever that life is. Beyond that, it's actually, you know, quite simple.
Right, and that's a great summary. Thanks for that. So is it desirable to have past life recall? Is there any use in knowing who we were in previous lives?
I always say everything you've lived, or as a fact, everything you've lived in the past is with you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have an issue of getting angry, if you have an issue of getting frustrated, if you have a long-term sadness that you can recall in this life, well, chances are that you haven't cleared it from your past lives. So there's the best reading that you can ever receive without going to anybody else, and that is, what is your current situation? Does it feel like an old pattern? Does it feel like a reoccurring form of behavior or emotional distress? And if so, and a lot of people do feel the ancientness of some of the things that they carry, and it's at that point that the person can say, well, there's my past lives, I've done this before. So really, that's the greatest past life reading you can get, and that is you giving it to yourself. It does get dangerous when you have certain psychics tell you you were this person or that person, or give you stories about why you are experiencing what you're experiencing today with the spin that they put on it, which often gives the responsibility to something not of your making,
mm-hmm.
which means a person can blame the past life for what they're experiencing today, as opposed to saying, no, today is my past life, and today I can make it healing.
Uh-huh. Beautiful. Do you do actual readings for people on their past lives? Do you get asked to do that?
I do from time to time, and I use it when the existing pattern or the existing behavior is so entrenched that the person needs the story to unlock it. And that story is really just to bring an understanding, not so much a resolution.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that you actually remember your past lives.
I have full access to my past lives and every single one of them. And the law about knowing your past lives is taking full responsibility of your current life. If you have full responsibility of the way in which you live in every way, shape and form energetically, you have access, you have an open window to how you've always lived. If we live in denial of how we are truly living right now, then you are also closing the door on how you've always lived. So it's a reincarnation, and the word responsibility are very, very, very associated,
mm-hmm.
and linked.
Do you ever talk about your particular past lives?
I do privately, and occasionally I do. It's a little bit too much for the general person to say you're this person and that person, particularly if you've had a public life in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy for someone to say, hey, I was this, or hey, I was that, and a lot of people do. And as I often humorously quote on my lectures, I've met 3 Cleopatras in the last 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Now, there can only be one. But, you know, I've met 3 Cleopatras. I've met some Mother Marys. I've met a few Jesuses. And
they say they were
okay. These in the past. Yeah.
Right. Well, if you don't mind, I would like to just give you a couple of names of people to see what you can tell us energetically about them. So this isn't a sensationalism about it. My intent in bringing this part forward is that I think it's quite useful for us to understand the energy behind certain lives. So that's why I'm asking this. And let's use Elvis, because this morning I was playing some early Elvis gospel tunes. What can you share energetically about, you know, that huge phenomena that was Elvis?
I have no reservation talking about past lives and reincarnation, Gail, so you can always ask. And Elvis is an interesting study in reincarnation. If we were open to reincarnation, studying Elvis would be amazing for us and very revealing, in the sense that you can see that in the beginning and the songs that you played today, you can feel the innocence. You can feel someone enjoying their voice and putting that voice to an expression. Later on, you can see that he uses his good looks, his fame, and so forth. So it's a big change from using his voice in innocence, which was what we would call just being himself, being esoteric and naturally so, to later where he is actually using his good looks and his fame. At that moment, the energy of the way in which he uses his voice is not the same as he used in his earlier life. So Elvis, we can say, is naturally esoteric from an energetic point of view, and later became very, very pranic, if we can use those terms to describe his career. But in the end, and drugs took him out, or whatever it was that took him out, Elvis goes back to being who he really was. And when he reincarnates, even though he has the momentum of what he created, if given the opportunity, which I feel he has been given, or I know he has been given, he returns to that esoteric sweetness that he once was. And the way in which past lives and current lives work is this. If Elvis is today, he's actually a little girl somewhere. If he is a little girl, he's actually a teenage girl by now. It's a teenage girl somewhere. He's living very naturally on a country estate somewhere. I'm not giving away where it is. And because he is back to his esoteric self, all his music that he left in his previous life is imprinted by his current way of life. And therefore, even though he was singing in some concerts totally off his face, on drugs, energetically the music is today listenable. In other words, it is clear to listen without being tainted by the prana in which it was sung at the time.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, one I'm always interested in is Alice A. Bailey. Now, in case some listeners don't know who Bailey is, maybe you could identify her, but for people who are aware of Alice A. Bailey's work, they would recognize the similarity in the language that you use and what you're presenting, and even the format of the books that you have published are so recognizably similar to the Bailey books, of which she wrote like 20 or something. So can you talk about Alice A. Bailey for a minute? And just before you do that, I want to just say to the listeners, you're tuned to Bay FM 99.9. I'm Gail Kew, sitting in for Des on Colors of Byron today. He's away having a little time with his family. And our guest this morning is Serge Ben-Hayen. If you want to know more about Serge, the best thing is to go to his website, which is universalmedicine.com.au. This morning we've been talking about the New Year's message. If you're just tuning in, you're on the tail end of the part about reincarnation, and I'm putting a few names up to him. We've just gotten to Alice A. Bailey. Over to you, Serge.
You're giving me 1 minute to talk about Alice A. Bailey?
No, you can have two.
Okay, Alice A. Bailey. My work is part of that lineage which began purposely through Madame Blavatsky, or Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. It was then given through Alice A. Bailey, which we know about, and I am that third imprint of that planned teaching by the hierarchy. The Lucis Trust that looks after the Alice A. Bailey material have not recognized me, but that doesn't mean anything, because Alice A. Bailey wasn't recognized by the Theosophical Society either. And it's often the case that that happens. Now, if I were to speak of Alice A. Bailey, I would say, what an amazing life for a woman to do what she did in that time period.
Which was the late 30s, early 40s.
During World War II and in the height of it. And she began her career in the 1920s, of course. But during the middle of the crux of what was going on in the world during the World War II, she put out a lot of information that was quite amazing for a woman of that time to do. It's an incredible discipline back then to be able to hold yourselves that steady to work with the masters, because the masters are free of karma. They are pure love. When they communicate with a physical body, as in the way that she did back then, required an enormous amount of discipline, an enormous amount of clash that she has to withstand and often made her sick. So hats off to Alice A. Bailey and to the great work that she's left behind. But what we've got to understand also with the Alice A. Bailey material is that today it is only informational, and it is not part of the energy that we have been released in. And so when you read those books, they don't awaken the centers, the energy centers, like they used to.
Because the energy on the planet is so different now. So her work came to an end at some point because the energy on the planet had changed.
Correct.
That much. And then the third transmission, which you're delivering, is energetically current.
This is correct.
Right. Now, the other one, just a couple more quickly. Leonardo da Vinci, I've been to your clinic, and I know that you've got many paintings, or replicas, I assume, of the paintings. And so I'm curious, are you a fan, or is there more to the Leonardo da Vinci paintings than the fact that they're beautiful and you like them?
Apart from that?
Apart from that.
It's in honor of a person who dedicated his life to the esoteric cause. Leonardo da Vinci is and was an ascended master, and everything that he did was never to aggrandize his talents. What he did was to serve mankind through his ability at that time. And so his paintings actually clear you. When you stand in front of them, they actually give you a pranic clearing. They clear your prana.
Oh.
And I have started to... I knew this, and I went to the gallery in London, National Gallery in London, and I observed, I stood in the corner and observed, and more people stand longer in the presence of the Virgin of the Rocks or of his famous cartoon than in any other painting. And you can feel that they actually stand there feeling the clarity. I also noticed at the Louvre in Paris, where people would walk full of prana towards the Mona Lisa and then walk away much clearer after they stood in her presence. And it's only a very small painting.
Mm.
But even from afar, these paintings are emanating clarity. And the reason why these paintings are today still active is what I said earlier about Elvis. Leonardo is in physical body today. He is living a pure esoteric life. As a result of that, the imprints of everything that is left behind are still esoterically active and serving as they did when he first released them. If he was to lose his way and become pranic, then those paintings would no longer serve.
Mm-hmm. Wow, fascinating. Okay, are there any other esoteric predecessors of renown that you might want to alert us and the listeners to so that they could look further into their biography?
There are, rather than quoting names, I much rather teach people how to feel energetically and the difference between prana and fire, and then let them make their own minds. Otherwise, it's Serge saying this person is safe and this person is not safe.
Right.
If you teach people the difference between prana and fire, which they can easily learn to do, they can look back in history and say this person was esoteric and this person was not. It's very, very important to teach that, because there are a lot of famous people who have not done good in the world from an energetic point of view, yet they're famous for doing good.
Right. Okay. Got it. Now, about teaching the difference between fire and prana, is that something you could do on air today for the listeners? Or is that too big of an ask?
I can't do it on air, but I can teach the techniques or talk about them, and that is this. What we've got to do with our human body is create a marker. A marker that we can say, that's true, or that's right, or that's harmony, or that's joy. And keep developing those markers. But in the beginning, let's just pick a marker and say, ah, okay, that was my joyful moment. And one day you will have more joy. And that joyful moment you once thought was joy will not be a joyful moment. Then there'll be a new marker. So the key is to create markers in your body that give you what you know is your truth, which is what meditation is all about. Then, once you have those markers established, all you need to do is read someone's material, listen to somebody talking, listen to music, And if that marker corresponds to what you're listening or reading or hearing, then you can say at least that is in accordance to your marker. But if you've established a marker of gentleness that is truly gentle, and you can read someone's material and it's not gentle, then no matter what that reputation or tradition or fame comes with, you can say that material is not for me because it's not producing at least the gentleness I choose to be.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to take a music break here, and we'll be back for a few more minutes with Serge. It's 9:30, and for those of you who are just tuning in, yes, this is Colors of Byron. I'm Gail Q, sitting in the chair for Des today. Our guest is Serge Ben-Hayen, well-known as an esoteric healer, working from Ganelabah most of the time, although traveling to the UK regularly. He's also an author of 5 books, and the producer, well, we're not sure about producer is the right word, involved in 4 music albums to date. About 9 months of the year, Serge presents on a Friday night Esoteric Medicine. This past year, he had to move the venue from the Ewingsdale Hall to the Byron Bay Public School, and that was to accommodate the growing number of people who are attending, usually around 250 to 300 people on the Friday night, and then Saturday afternoons a different presentation. Those are open to all. I recently had someone inquire if you had to be a member or some kind of exclusive club, but it's open to all, minimal cost, $5 on the Friday night. So before we move on to the next section, and time's just getting away from us on the interview, as it always does, Serge is going to talk briefly about meditation, because during the esoteric medicine presentations, he often does a meditation. So, Serge, what purpose does meditation serve? Why do you offer it on the Friday nights?
The purpose of meditation from an esoteric point of view is to make us stop, sit, and create a marker. That's really what the purpose of meditation is from an esoteric point of view, and that's really what it is about. It's never should never be about escaping. It should never be about looking for answers or resolution to anything that you haven't found an answer for. So meditation is life. The way you live is meditation. So when you actually sit to meditate, so to speak, that's just one part of meditation. Throughout the year, we'll be putting out some more free download meditations, as we currently have on the website, and your listeners and others can tune in and download them from the website,
which is universalmedicine.com.au.
correct. Yeah. So meditation really is just an opportunity to stop and create a marker that then sends you back out to do your activity in the hope that marker that's created is not deviated too far from. So if you create a marker of gentleness when you meditate and then you go out to live, then that livingness should be at least equal to that which you created when you sat. That's okay. The purpose.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about the esoteric medicine, which you do offer these presentations on, and which you learn a lot at these presentations. I just wanted to clarify, is it actually possible to get an appointment with you, Serge, individually anymore? Or, yeah, what is that situation? I know you have a lot of practitioners at your clinic, very qualified and capable, so people do also see other practitioners. Is it possible to get an appointment with you?
Look, it's very, very possible, and what I do now is I only treat emergencies when it comes to the students, because they have access to all my teachings and lectures and so forth, so they will now move on to my group sessions. But for newcomers, new students, the ability to have opportunity to have a private session is there. The problem is that when we release it books out really, really fast. And so when we released it back in November, it booked out 7 months in advance. So what we do then, because it gets crazy and we could probably fill out the whole year, so we put a stop to it and then recalibrate that later in the year when we announce the next release. But I'm always available for emergencies. I see people at 5 a.m. in the morning. I've seen them late at night. So I'm always accessible for any form of or true emergency. I've never knocked back an emergency.
All right. So back to the presentations that you do on esoteric medicine. to see if I've got this right and clarify for the listeners, when people have physical illness, they come for a healing, and while the physical condition may clear, what you're actually doing is healing the spirit, or are you healing the soul? Or is the soul always whole the way it is?
The soul is always whole. It never has any illness or disease.
Okay, so it's in a spiritual plane that these illnesses are manifesting.
This is correct. All right.
So what I'd like to do next, given that the time is slipping away from us on the interview, I'd like to say the name of a body part, which may be an organ or an actual structural hinge, and then you tell the listeners what energy is held in that part of the body.
Just before you do, our great science is reincarnation.
Yes.
Our second great science is to learn the science of expression.
Okay.
And therefore, our human bodies are vehicles of expression, as is the spiritual body a vehicle of expression, as is the soul body a vehicle of expression. Now,
okay,
as to make it simple, if our vehicles of expression are used in their fullness, there is no illness or disease. But if our vehicles of expression are denied that full soulful expression, then the part that you suppress becomes ill or diseased. Now over to you.
Okay, that's much clearer. Thank you. All right. Well, I want to do the spleen first, because you often talk about sleeping to spleen time, which means during the time that the spleen is doing its job, if you are at rest or asleep, the spleen can work much more efficiently. What is that job of the spleen?
The job of the spleen is to clear the day's events from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m., and it does that every night. And so ideally, being in bed by 8:39 is the best way to be. If your spleen is too full of prana that it hasn't been able to clear because you've been living in too much excess, then the spleen is the major organ of sleeplessness, because it is unable to put you into a rhythm of sleep, because it's still trying to clear itself from days and days and days and days and days of build-up of the way in which we've been living. So the spleen is the organ that clears us each night.
Mm-hmm. The liver, what energy is in the liver?
The liver is responsible for harmony from the neck down, our ability to be harmonious in the way we walk, the way we touch, the way we grab things, the way we are in every way, shape and form as a physical human being from the neck down. But in suppression and in contrast to that harmony, the liver becomes the organ of anger, and it stores anger, which is two ways. Outward anger, everybody knows about.
Mm.
The inward anger is actually a hardness, where we hold ourselves in a hard way in order to protect ourselves from the sadnesses that we've encountered. So the liver is the storehouse of anger or hardness, or it can be the organ of harmony.
Mm. Gallbladder.
Gallbladder is the same as the liver, but from the neck up. So the gallbladder is the organ that inspires free thinking, clarity of thinking, and resolution in thinking. But in suppression, the gallbladder becomes the organ of frustration, resentment, bitterness, and rage.
Pancreas.
Pancreas is the organ that inspires the body to go forth, to embrace life, and to look forward to what's ahead. In other words, if you're saying my New Year's resolution is, we really should be saying it from our pancreas.
Mm-hmm.
But in suppression to that, the pancreas receives the person's energy who doesn't choose life and instead chooses to be driven by ideals or beliefs. So the pancreas gets affected two ways: inwardly by the suppression, which causes diabetes, and outwardly by the person who is driven by what they think they need to achieve in order to get recognition and acceptance. So those who climb Mount Everest are climbing it from their pancreas. Not a very good thing to do.
The lungs.
The lungs are the breath of God. The lungs are the heart of God in the body. Whereas the heart is the heart of the soul in the body, the lungs are the heart of God in the body. And lots and lots of lung conditions are going to increase. Lung cancer is going to increase, and many more illnesses towards the lungs are going to increase as a result of people living in separation to God the Father.
Hips.
Hips is where we store ideals and beliefs. And if you have a look in Australia, our elderly are always stuck on ideals and beliefs. So lots of hip replacements and lots of hip issues. And many, many people are walking around with their hips displaced, in other words, not aligned. And that's because we give too much power to ideals and beliefs, as opposed to living from what we know is true, from our inner heart.
Knees.
Knees. Knees are connected to the nervous system and to the bladder. Outwardly, they are a fear of moving forward. So any knee condition or any knee ill or injury is to do with you having fear of moving forward. Inwardly, they represent somebody in anxiousness and in nervous energy.
Ankles?
Ankles are about confidence, flexibility, multidirectional abilities of dealing with life. So when you roll your ankle, you are having difficulty with, or you're having confidence issues.
Elbows.
Elbows are about family support. When we don't feel supported, we normally bump our elbow or have an elbow injury.
Wrists.
Wrists are very connected to the lung, and they're very connected to our lifeline, which starts at the wrist and goes all the way to the fold of the elbow. So don't believe your psychics when they tell you your lifeline is in the palm of your hand. It is not. It's from your wrist to your folding elbow on the inside. And the wrists represent your connection to God and your support with God.
Teeth.
Teeth are part of the karma. They're part of bones and they're part of the endocrine system. Whereas your gums are connected to your spleen. So when you have bleeding gums, it means that you have been in disregard.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Okay, we're listening to Serge Ben-Hayen, and he does have other interviews that you can get from his website as well, just on the About Us tab. So that was a very condensed version of the kinds of information that comes through Esoteric Medicine, the Friday night presentations. And recently, one of the topics that was raised there, I believe, was around organ transplants. And just briefly, what do you think about organ transplants? Because Western medicine is going more and more towards this, although hundreds of people are dying on waiting lists. Is this a good thing or not?
Conventional medicine, I'm very pro of, as you know, and I state that publicly. But some of the things that they pursue are not necessarily the way we should be going. And yes, we can all say in the preservation of a life, organ donation is the way and transplant is the way to go. But sometimes that person, we need to respect that end of life is for that person the best thing, knowing that they're going to reincarnate and start anew. So the preservation of life should not always be the goal. Now, if you're receiving a transplant, if you're receiving another organ, you are receiving the energetic imprinting of how another has lived. And now there's an enormous amount of information about those who have received a heart transplant and the way that they've changed their life. Mm-hmm. But what you've got to remember is, yes, that person is still living, but the way in which they're living is not the way they are to truly unfold and develop their journey back to their soul. Because they've now had introduced into their lifestyle other choices that another has made that person would not otherwise make.
Well, that seems pretty clear. Okay, I think we better take a music break, and then we'll be back just to say goodbye to Serge. But I've got one more question for him, so I hope you can stay tuned. That's Chris James from his earlier CD called Silk. Our guest this morning, Serge Ben-Hayen, who's been involved in the last three albums of Chris James, but we're not actually going to get around to talking to music about music this morning. I'm Gail Q. I'm filling in for Des on Colors of Byron. We've been talking with Serge Ben-Hayen, and if you'd like more information on Serge, on esoteric healing, or on the Universal Medicine Clinic, your best resource is to go to the website, universalmedicine.com.au. And Serge, is that, do you think, the best way for people to get an introduction to the work that you're doing, or is it by reading one of your books, or is the website the best resource?
The website has never been aimed to bridge the public necessarily. It's really aimed at the students who are involved, so the language is straight into it. The new, this year's New Year's message is a little more in the sense of getting the public to see what we're really about and where we stand and where we come from. But the books are a good way to introduce yourself to the work, but also the monthly gatherings of esoteric medicine and the EDG are also a way to introducing yourself into our work.
And those dates and venues are on the website
on the
as
website.
Well. Now, this is all speaking to people as if everyone has the internet, and I guess that's maybe an assumption. Not everyone does. Do you want to give the clinic phone number just once for people?
The clinic phone number is 6624-3706.
Okay, for those of you who don't have the internet. Well, this is about the close of the interview, but the last question for Serge is, when you do go to his website, there's a welcome message in there that says, "You welcome all who seek life and expression as one unified truth." And that's one of those phrases people kind of stumble over. What does one unified truth mean?
Okay, so we live in a world where we can say everything is energy, and that means everything is energy. If that is the case, then energetically there has to be a one truth that we can say energetically that is the truth. And if it makes a lot of sense if we said that the one unified truth will unite us all. If you have a version of happiness and I have a version of happiness, one of those happinesses will be the truth and the other one may not be the truth. And while we've been championing differences, what will make us all really true is the one unified truth where we can all say, hey, we've just discovered what makes every single person joyful. And if we had that, then everybody can aim towards that type of joyfulness and they'll have their own individuality in it. But at least we can say that is joy. That's what the one unified truth is.
And a great note to end on. Serge, thank you for coming in this morning and speaking to the Bay FM listeners about the work you're doing through Universal Medicine.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And we'll go out with one more of Chris James on this. And Jean will be in with Jazz Moods at 10 o'clock following the national radio news. It's 9:51. Our guest this morning, Serge Ben-Hayen. The essence of the work that flows through Serge is in line with that which can be called sacred and esoteric by nature. It is non-traditional, following no allegiance to any cult, form, or belief other than that which is found intuitively at the heart center, in accordance with the spirit of the hierarchy. No claims are made other than the stance that the work, like all other before us, should always be ascertained by the individual to be the work of truth or not. Serge is known as the healer's healer. He communicates sacred teachings through esoteric healings. I hope you enjoyed the interview this morning. I'm Gail Q, just filling in for Des. He'll be back next week. It's 2 minutes to 10, so we've got national radio news coming up at 10, followed by Jean with Jazz Moods. As Serge was going out the door, he said he'd hoped we could do it again in 2012. So check the Bay FM program guide next January to see if we've managed to score a spot. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm Gail Q.